This is Jim Inkster coming today on Talk Louisiana. We'll visit with LSU economist Jim Richardson, the veteran who is head of the Revenue Estimating Conference. He will talk about the fiscal cliff that looms on June 30th, and also we'll hear from Mark Ballard, the Capital Bureau Chief for The Advocate. He'll talk about the legislative maneuvering going on both in front and behind the scenes as lawmakers weigh options on what to do with a pending $1.1 billion shortfall and the governor giving the legislature a January 19th deadline. Also, Texas singer-songwriter Adam Carroll on his varied career and his performance that will be going on Saturday in Baton Rouge at Christian Street Furniture. We'll talk with Adam Carroll, quite a character. Also, the news coming next on WRKF. Good morning, this is Jim Inkster, and welcome to Talk Louisiana. Our guest to begin the show today is James Richardson, the LSU economist, a man who's been at the Old War School for a few years, and since 1987 he served as the private economist on the Louisiana Revenue Estimating Conference. That's the panel with the constitutional authority and responsibility to provide official revenue estimates for the state. And he is with us to talk about what is happening with the fiscal cliff looming on June 30th. We're talking about 5 months and 19 days from what is projected to be a billion-dollar-plus shortfall if lawmakers and the governor don't come to some sort of consensus on how to address this. 877-217-5757. Thank you for listening to 89.3 WRKF. And if you're dialing in Baton Rouge, 297-5633. The email is talk@talklouisiana.org. Good morning, Dr. Richardson.
Hey, good morning, Jim. How are you doing?
Good to talk with you. What's your assessment of where we are right now?
Well, I think we're, as the governor would say, and as the members of the legislature would say, we have to make a decision. And that decision has to be made very quickly, within the next 5 months or so. And everybody agrees there is a fiscal cliff. If we do nothing, then we'll be about $1.2 billion short of what we did last year, not raising expenditures, but just what we did last year in terms of keeping certain public services alive and helpful to the state. So they have to make a decision. They have to decide if they're going to, one, pay for this and how they're going to pay for it, or if they don't want to pay for it, then what particular services do they simply do not want any longer.
Well, lawmakers are talking, but thus far the talk has not resulted in them coming close to meeting this January 19th deadline set by the governor. So it appears, Jim Richardson, that this may have to be withheld until the very end of the deadline that is for real on June 30th. So what happens if they go into June without an agreement? Do you think that they can come together and cooler heads will prevail, or will we have chaos at the Capitol?
Well, I think there's really two possibilities. One is perhaps the governor gets it and the legislature get together and say, okay, we'll have something done by before the beginning of the regular session, which is in March 15th or 20th, in that time range. And this session is not cannot be used to do a tax. It's only non-tax issues. So they have to do it in a special session. Well, and if indeed they do not come together before that, then they will, in the process of the regular session, they can talk out of a budget, but I don't think I'll pass one because it will look god-awful, unless they're willing to cut spending enormously, and the governor's not said he is willing to do that at all. So I think then you're ending up with, okay, we'll come down in June, and we'll have about 20 days to get a budget passed, to get the tax measures passed, and to get the capital outlay passed. Now, that's not to say they will not have talked about this before. They'll have talked about it a lot before, but they can't really do anything to those last several weeks, and they'll be, you have a lot to do in a very short period of time, and the legislators will be pushed. And then they have to have an agreement, and it has to be on the books. Otherwise, I'm not really sure we really know what happens on July the 1st if no budget is passed, if and no new taxes are raised or replaced. So that's really uncharted territory.
And the governor has said that he does not want to renew the penny, the fifth penny on the sales tax. He doesn't like that as a solution to this. I don't think it would be a solution, but some would say that's better than nothing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, and that's where we get down. I mean, there are really several major decision points. First, the decision point is, okay, how much is the fiscal cliff? And that's really saying, how much do we want to spend next year compared to what we spent this year? And if we want to keep spending about the same amount on higher education, on elementary and secondary education, on roads, on health care, et cetera, then you're talking you need about $1 billion to $1.2 billion. Okay, that's the first big decision. Do we want to keep spending that much, or do we want to lower it? And the governor has he'll put out his plan next week about the executive budget. The legislature has to say, well, and chime in. They would start talking about it. And if they don't want to spend that much, they have to come up with, okay, we don't want to spend that much. We want to cut here or there. And this is where you get into the problem. They say, well, we'll just pass that responsibility to the governor, or we'll do it ourselves. And they've been more likely to pass it to the governor, say, mm-hmm. You choose where you want to cut. And then you have that issue. And then the issue is, okay, let's say they all agree, Republicans, Democrats, House, Senate, the governor, we really want to raise $1.2 billion. We have been doing it with a sales tax, which was imposed in the special session in 2016 when Governor Edwards became governor, and there was a major shortfall. That was a one penny sales tax, 5% state. That was also taking off some exemptions and putting taxes on things we had not taxed before or not taxed as much, and doing a few things like that. And that was temporary. That was only for a short period of time. Now we have to either redo that, exactly the same thing, or we have to say, are there better alternatives? And they've had several tax cut studies, and I was part of some of those. Members of the administration had people from business, people from labor, people from academic, and they've made some suggestions. They suggest that we are very, very reliant on the sales tax. We probably want to change that focus a little bit and go more, have a little more income tax, not big, but a little bit more income tax. It changes exactly the distribution of who pays for public services, what it really does. Also, the income tax is a little bit more of a growth tax. It keeps up with the economy a little bit better. And then the sales tax is people talk about having an impact on individuals, and you say, well, that one penny, nobody really knows. You got 5 cents, 5% or 4%. Who knows? You go to the restaurant to buy a meal. Who knows? But if you buy a car, it's a big deal. In fact, many people who don't have the ability to pay cash for cars and things like that, they have to borrow more money over a long period of time to and that includes this higher sales tax.
Right.
If you go buy a washing machine or refrigerator or another major appliance, or you add on to your house, have building materials, then that 1%, it becomes real money. It becomes much more noticeable. And the other thing about that sales tax is it's a big tax on business, too, and business complains about paying taxes. Well, when they up the sales tax, they do that. That has a business aspect to it. Businesses pay some taxes, too, with that sales tax. So it has a larger effect. It's not very noticeable, necessarily, on my everyday shopping, but it is noticeable over a longer period of time. And the other problem with the sales tax, as we mentioned, is that we are also, at the local level, we put a great deal of reliance on the sales tax. So we essentially are choking local governments by putting it so high they don't have the ability to do their functions. And then, of course, we complain that, well, we local should do more. Well, we are taking away from the tax base. So we suggested, hey, and all these studies have suggested, just put a little bit more emphasis on the income tax. It's not a high income tax, and we don't want to make a high income tax because we realize there are downfalls to that, too. But it does alter it alters the tax system a little bit. And right now, the governor has pushed a few of these things, and like you said, these are not new ideas. They've been around for a long time. Now it's time, Jim, we have to make a choice.
Didn't we have what you're talking about with the Stelly plan?
Well, yes, we did. We had that from 2002. In fact, we talked about the income tax going back in the 80s. Vic Stelly, a representative from Lake Charles, a Republican representative from Lake Charles, made it a real passion to change. He went out and got the votes to actually make constitutional changes in the income tax. He won, not by landslide, but he won 51-49. And in terms of he made that change, we had it. And it was providing a lot of income, though a lot of things were happening from 2002 to 2008. You had Katrina, you had a lot of federal money coming in. Oil prices had moved up to over $100 a barrel. So a lot of things were happening which caused income to rise naturally. And the change in the tax system also helped us a little bit. So it was a very big number, and we had big surpluses. And then in 2007, under Governor Blanco, we repealed part of Stelly on the income tax side. And then when Governor General became governor in 2008, we repealed the second part of Stelly. And essentially, we undid what we had done in 2002 in terms of the income tax.
Your number is 877-217-5757 or locally 297-5633. We're talking with Jim Richardson, LSU economist, back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, another segment with Jim Richardson. Dr. Richardson, since 1987, has been the private economist on the Louisiana Revenue Estimating Conference, the panel with the constitutional responsibility to provide official revenue estimates for the state. And right now, if you heard the governor yesterday on his monthly program, you know that we're going to be $1.1 billion in the hole, according to the governor, who next week will be unveiling a budget showing exactly that, a deficit that has to be addressed by cuts. And Jim Richardson, he said it won't be pretty. He acknowledged that some people may have some real trepidation about what they see. Is this one of those scare tactics, or is this real?
Well, no. I guess it can be a scare tactic from one sense, but no. The governor has a responsibility. He's got to have an executive budget. He's got to be balanced. He can only count the money that the legislatures have approved. And as of the end of 2018, or of the fiscal year 2018, the taxes are not there. They have not been approved. So he has to live within the means. So he has to put out a budget that meets the realities of the law, and that reality is that they simply will be short $1.2 billion. So you have to. The only place you can do it, you can't go and put in a little column saying, okay, well, we think we're going to get they will pass as many taxes for us. We know. We'll put that in. They can't do that. They can only say, okay, we only know right now we have so much money. That's all we can spend, and that means that we have to leave somebody off of them, and they have to say, where can we do that? And that's just reality. That's not a scare tactic. That's reality. Now, do I believe that the budget he puts out executive will be the budget that will eventually pass at the end of June? No, I don't.
Dan,
but right now, he has to do that.
Right. Dan Downtown, you're on the air with Jim Richardson. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Dr. Richardson. I mean, is there really any hope for Louisiana if one of your prestige can't shame these right-wing legislators to put education and health care below citizens ahead of their pandering to Grover Norquist orthodoxy?
All right. Is politics part of this? We have a Democratic governor who some of his critics say he's never met a tax he didn't like. That would be unfair, but that's politics. But we have a Republican legislature that is hearing from Senator John Kennedy that we can cut our way to prosperity. How much of this political stuff in the background is affecting the negotiations?
Well, I've, as you said, I've been involved with government for a long time, and I watch people on both sides, Democrats, Republicans, liberals, conservatives, progressive, whatever you want to call them. They all come here with very different ideas about what's good for the state. They represent different constituencies, and then they have to come somehow make it all work out. And it's hard. It's not pretty at all. It's hard. But one thing and this is to answer the Dan's question or comment, is Louisiana a loser? No, I don't think so. Which our politics are tough, and they've always been tough. Now, it will be nice if we had some long-term stability on both sides, either, and I think that would be the nicest thing we could have. It will help us a great deal in terms of encouraging businesses to come, because right now a business comes, they have no idea what they may expect in a year or two down the road. I think the stability would be helpful if you're conservative, if you're liberal, mm-hmm. if you're a Democrat, if you're Republican. It'd be very helpful to the state. And ideally they work that out. I think probably there's no doubt that the partisan politics has become a little bit stronger or a little bit more, I guess, noticeable in the last several years. But I think it'll work out. Yeah, they'll work it out, but won't be pretty as such. On the other hand, I say that, you know, we talk about the spending. And if you look at the budgets put out by Governor Edwards, and you look at them compared to what they had under Governor Jindal, a Republican, and a governor who said he was not going to raise the tax, he was going to only rely on spending cuts. Well, they had budgets, and yet you look at the budget over the 8 years in real terms, it didn't go down really. And they came to the conclusion they wanted to spend this much. And Governor Edwards is not spending a lot more than that at all. It's very similar. So in that sense, he has not been pumping up the spending, but he has to raise revenues to cover the spending, which had been around there for many years now. So I think that's the real element. And even if you go back to 2003, 2004, looking at our spending per capita in real terms, it's not that much different today than it was then, by a couple of dollars. But you're really talking, so, I mean, that's the real element, is we apparently have decided we like to spend this much. We think it's important, if it's for higher education, for elementary education, or what. But, again, we need to have the revenue structure to support that, if that's what we really want to do. Or we have to say there are certain services we just don't need anymore.
All right, and well,
that's a tough decision.
Senator Kennedy, former Treasurer Kennedy, has said we can cut our way to prosperity, and he has some lawmakers who are adhering to his edict. Jason, a listener, notes that this is the same John Kennedy who was a contributor to the Romer Reform Plan in 1989, which, like most reform plans, included some cuts and some new taxes. So has Senator Kennedy changed his heart or changed his mind, or is this part of the political process that is ongoing?
Well, I worked with John with Governor Romer. I've worked with John since, you know, sometimes. Everybody has a right to change over 30 years. You don't have to be have the same idea forever. I think it's a tough thing on the spending side. It's easy to say, it's much harder to do. And it's harder to do because many of the programs we are not prepared to give up. And I think this is why it's very simple to talk about spending the issue. Okay, if it is, then you have to be, okay, let's be specific. Exactly what is it that we need to give up? And that's where we get into the difficulty, when you start saying specifics. And that's where I think, if you really believe spending is the issue, then you can say, okay, we're going to cut this. And like I say, put a program out like TOPS. We're going to take it off the books. That saves money. But I tell you, it will not get passed the legislature.
Well, and that would save, I think, about $300 million, and that leaves that leaves another $800 million to be cut.
That doesn't solve the problem, but it's a big one program that has a big price tag on it. Do it away with it, and then of course, wait, we can't do that. Mm-hmm. And then you say, okay, we'll just raise tuition every place, cut. And this is what essentially the general administration did. They said, okay, we're going to cut higher education, and you raise tuition to make up for it, which is not unlike other states have done. It's not like we did this, or we're the only state doing this. Other states did the same thing, raise tuition. But then that puts extra pressure on particularly middle-income families and lower-income families. How do they pay for this if education is the way their children get out of, you know, up and coming in the world? So you have all these tremendous questions to ask, and they're sensitive. And then you say, well, health care. And this is where there's undoubtedly, I would say, health care has grown. It grew under Jindal. It has grown under Governor Edwards. And it's an issue we cover. You cut health care, then you're talking about a lot of programs are very important to people in around the state. So anytime you put something on the table, you're going to say, you know, that's an important program.
Well, Jim Richardson, it's always good to get your take. I don't know of anybody who knows the budget better than you, and you have been doing this for 31 years. So we'll be talking again, I'm sure, and we'll see what happens. But thanks for joining us today on Talk Louisiana.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. Take care now.
See you, Dr. Richardson. And we'll have Mark Ballard, the Capitol Bureau Chief for the Advocate, with us in short order. He'll have some thoughts about what's going on with legislative maneuvering as Republicans and Democrats right now are not coming to a consensus. What does this mean? Now the news with Karen Henderson on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana on 89.3 WRKF, 877-217-5757. We're joined from the Capitol by the man who heads the state Capitol reporting for The Advocate, the newspaper of record in Louisiana, Mark Ballard. And we just heard from Jim Richardson, Mark, about the budget chaos that is ongoing. And at this point, it appears there is certainly some chaos and some confusion and some uncertainty about which direction we're going to go. How significant is it right now?
Yeah, well, you're right about all of that, but I think that the key point here is the politics involved, and that's where I can't really say with certainty where things are going to go. Right now you have the Republicans saying, well, we need to have a little more specifics from the governor on his proposals. And then you have the governor saying, we need a little more specifics about what you all propose to do. And kind of floating over all of this is the politics of the situation of which you have a group of Republicans, though they won't say so on the record, that don't want to see the governor succeed in this.
Is it such that politics may prevail over the interests of the electorate?
It just might. It just might. I tend to be more of a glasses half full sort of fellow, and so I'm thinking that at some point they're going to come up with a some sort of means to address this $1 billion deficit that you all were talking about in the last half hour. It's a but right now it does not appear like they're any closer to getting that accomplished than they were, you know, back in June and July when they started their negotiations, if you will.
877-217-5757 and 297-5633 for Mark Ballard, Capitol Bureau Chief for The Advocate. And this could mean some, and I'm not exaggerating, I think it is appropriate to say draconian cuts if this impasse is not addressed. And Mark, many of these lawmakers, and we're talking primarily about the House, almost exclusively regarding the House and the governor, that they were teammates of the governor, at least they were in the same chamber. I think he thought he would have a better time dealing with them, but many of them are term limited. What motivation would there be to make life difficult for this governor, for lawmakers who won't be back come 2020?
Well, I mean, the motive, first off, there are many of them are term limited, but they're looking for other jobs, maybe moving up to the Senate or other kind of government jobs that they can jump into. But there's also a vast majority that are not term limited, and there is a feel among at least some of the Republicans, not all, but some of the Republicans that we can't really do anything for this governor. He can't be able to say he won't be able to say, "Look, I fixed the state budget."
And it only takes 36 of them to block a tax, too.
It does. And you have about 20 of them in this gang of no that does not matter what happens, they're going to vote against the governor. And so that leaves about 16, and that block is kind of led by the Speaker and the House Majority Leader, but they still haven't kind of come to an agreement on what to do.
877-217-5757, Joe near Segan Lane. Joe, you're on Talk Louisiana with Mark Ballard. Hi, Joe.
Yes, good morning. I have a question about sources of revenue versus budget cuts. It seems to me that the LSU Athletic Department brings in millions and millions of dollars every year, but yet we're talking about severe cuts to colleges and universities, especially LSU. Where does all that revenue from football and basketball go, and why can't it be used to support the academics at LSU?
All right, Joe. Well, most of it goes to pay for other sports.
It does, and unlike most colleges around the country, the profit, if you will, that comes in from the athletic department, some of it does go to the academics. The athletic department has been for the past several years writing large checks to
$1 million.
To the academics. Well,
$6 million, $7 million.
I'm not a superstar radio host, so that's a huge check for me.
it's a huge check for everybody in the state.
The other issue is
but in the context of a budget that's what close to $30 billion, we're not talking about something that's going to address the huge shortfall and the $1 billion that we could be facing come June 30th.
One other point about the athletic department is that they have put together a foundation that is not, it is directly linked to the athletic department, but it is not a state agency, and they're the ones that reap most of those benefits.
All of those records from the Tiger Athletic Foundation are private, but many records are public, and I'm affiliated with Tiger Ag. We've gone through those records, And the only sports that really make money are football by a huge margin, a little bit in baseball, a little bit in basketball, and every other sport loses money. For example, the women's basketball coach earns base salary $700,000 a year, and I think that program lost $4 million last year. So there are a lot of sports that are a drain on the money that football brings in.
Right, and is actually paid for by the money that football brings in.
Correct. Well, the budget impasse is such that House Democratic Caucus Chair Gene Reynolds of Mendon says the GOP leaders should have a proposal that they are presenting. He says that is not happening, Mark, that they're waiting to see what the governor does. And, of course, the governor is wanting to see what hand they're playing. This cat-and-mouse thing can't go on for too long, can it?
It cannot go on for too long because because of the law, they're going to have to deal with this fiscal impasse in a special session, and they'll either do that prior to the regular session, which begins in March, or they'll do it after the regular session ends, because come July 1st, they're going to be $1 billion short if they don't address this issue. I think, again, politics kind of pops in on this because nobody really wants to be the author of draconian cuts in state government, and they're kind of saying, well, let the governor handle all of that. You know, let him take the hit for, you know, closing state parks, for cutting back on some of the in-home health care. And we've seen that over and over again where cuts were proposed, but then were pulled. pulled back by the legislature.
All right. Here's some questions from listeners. Scott says, why doesn't the legislature look at reducing some of the generous tax subsidies the state pays to businesses, such as the inventory tax credit?
Well, I know some of the legislators are doing just that, but the business community is very powerful in this state, and they've complained about paying too much taxes, and they are protective of those tax exemptions that they've been getting over the years, but particularly during the Jindal administration, which cuts down with their overall the check that they have to write for taxes.
Steve Windham, the former budget director, Mark, says Dr. Richardson has made the same remarks for many years. Study after study has been done. When will the public demand of its elected officials that they fix this? The legislature, writes Steve, never likes cuts the governor recommends, but they never offer realistic alternatives. The blame game has accomplished nothing but stalemate.
And it's hard to argue with Mr. Windham on that. But I think we're about to go through another couple of months of 1, 2, 3, not me. It's your fault.
Well, and Joe opened up a can of worms about LSU athletics. Tracy writes that LSU just spent $85 million on an upgrade of its recreational facility. $85 million is correct, by the way. How can the university complain about budget cuts elsewhere when it spends $85 million on a spruced-up rec center?
Well, that rec center was paid for by a fee that was put on that the students themselves voted for, and it was it's being paid for with that fee. So it's not really coming directly out of the state general fund. The argument for that, if you were to listen to President Alexander and the LSU Board of Supervisors, is that in order to attract students, and now keep in mind that students and their tuitions and fees are paying the bulk of the education at LSU and all the other state public universities, they need to have these sort of things like the Lazy River type of rec center that they have.
Well, it's a beautiful facility, but it is at a distinct cost, and we've talked about this before. The Knock Knock Children's Museum, which is a beautiful facility, literally a few yards away, it was built at a cost of $14 million, and this one is $85 million to be paid for many, many years through student fees that could be used for something else. I think one of the arguments, Mark, is that these students voted for it, and then most of them are long gone by now. Other students are having to pay for it with their student fees.
Well, and yes, that is true, and those that voted on it, but that happens all across government, federal and state. I mean, we're going to be paying for, new utility companies, generating plants, even though you and I probably will be gone by the time that they get any use out of them. So that does happen, and it's a legitimate argument, but it does happen all across government.
877-217-5757. Is your number for Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief for the Advocate, 297-5633 in Baton Rouge. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. We'll hear some more from him, and then we'll be joined by singer-songwriter Adam Carroll of Texas, who will be in Baton Rouge on Saturday night. We're back after this pause on 89.3 WRKF with more Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief for the Advocate, is with us. Last week, if you were listening, Mark discussed the top stories in Louisiana with yours truly. And if you'd like to make a comment, 877-217-5757 about this or any other matter, you still have a chance to get in with the man who covers the Capitol with Ernest, Mark Ballard. And you've been doing this for a few years, Mark.
I have. I guess about a decade now in Louisiana, but in Texas and New York before that.
Right. Now, a listener notes that last week when we were running down the big stories of the year, I neglected to mention the major advance by LSU in proving Albert Einstein's theory of relativity with those gravitational waves that were detected. That this is from Holly, and she is exactly right.
No, she is exactly. I had it on my list, but we, you know, kind of ran out of time. But that is, that was an incredible discovery, primarily because it allows them to triangulate these waves, sound waves, and find the black hole directly in the sky. I mean, it was a huge. And it was a huge miss for us, frankly.
Well, and it's something that shows that despite the budget cuts, there is some great work being done on college campuses in our state.
There is, and the folks at the at LIGO and LSU, they working with other universities and kind of putting together these coalitions have done. What is remarkable, at least in the world of physics and astrophysics, is a remarkable achievement.
And another listener noting once again the quandary with athletics makes note of the fact that Les Miles, the deposed coach of LSU, is earning $133,000 a month for the next 8 years not to coach, and now LSU has just fired a coordinator that's offensive coordinator Matt Canada, and he has a $1.7 million buyout, saying that's money that could be better spent. And that's an interesting point, Mark.
It is. Now, the money is coming from the Tiger Athletic Foundation, so it's not tax dollars. But still, there's kind of this overall thought of that I think kind of permeates the thinking of how we go about spending, and that's, you know, that we can, you know, discard these folks, give them such contracts that they can that they can leave, and we still have to pay them for, you know, years to come.
And another note is that those contributions to TAF are no longer deductible under the new tax plan that Congress and the President approved.
Yeah, and that may come to be a problem. We got that tax. It was a tax write-off that was kind of inserted in a bill by Russell Long, or at his insistence, and it has been very helpful, not just for our athletic program and our football teams, but for others around the country to create these funds that would be kind of outside and be basically to promote and to help the athletic programs, primarily the football teams. It remains to be seen how that's going to impact in the end, but certainly I like taking that money off of my seat license. I like to be able to take that money off of my income tax.
And lastly, another listener notes that Forbes lists Tom Benson as the richest man in Louisiana. I think our only billionaire, $2.8 billion is his estimated worth, and yet he's getting huge tax cuts from the state.
I think we're going to be seeing some legislation. Yes, he is. The Saints really are a taxpayer-subsidized organization, and I think we're going to be seeing legislation in this upcoming session that's going to at least look at that. A lot of those contracts are signed, and they won't be able to be tampered with. But you know, those tax subsidies come up for renewals, and I believe that some of the legislators are wanting to kind of back that out, or you know, at least say, well, if New Orleans likes that football team so much, let the city of New Orleans provide those tax incentives.
Well, thank you, Mark Ballard. It's always a pleasure, and we'll catch up with you next week.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Jim.
Mark Ballard, Capital Bureau Chief for The Advocate. We're joined now in our remaining moments this hour with Adam Carroll, a respected singer-songwriter from San Marcos, Texas. He'll be playing at Christian Street Furniture on Saturday. This is a Dyson House production, and his music has been covered by many fine artists, and here's a sampling of what people will hear if they show up at Christian Street Furniture on Saturday from Adam Carroll.
Looking out the screen door, through the smoke into your eyes. Looking out the screen door, through the smoke into your eyes. You're smiling through the screen door, darling. It's worth 10,000 goodbyes.
Adam Carroll, who is one of the fine artists to come out of the great state of Texas. And, Allie, do we have the right line? Because I got a buzz when I picked up just a moment ago, and I want to make sure we're okay with this fine gentleman whose body of work is expansive, with 8 independently produced albums to his name. And he is going to be featured at an unusual venue, a Dyson House production that will be at Christian Street Furniture on Saturday night. And let's see if we can get him on the line. And we had him, and he's gone away, but I think we'll be able to restore contact with Mr. Carroll. His musical biography is as winding as the stories in his songs, full of faraway places and close-to-home meditations that encompass a career built on countless shows in Texas clubs, thousands of miles on the road with his partner in life and in music, Chris Carroll, accolades of all kinds, and still the burning desire to simply write the next song. And I think we have restored contact with Mr. Carroll, who's gained attention from publications like Rolling Stone, the latter Rolling Stone, which noted that he is talented beyond his years. And good morning to you, Adam Carroll.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Doing well. And my guess is that you haven't performed in too many furniture stores in your career.
Well, this will be my second one, actually. So that's true.
But you've been in all kinds of venues.
Yeah, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Mostly, being a kind of a folk singer, you know, mostly house concerts and listening venues, you know, coffee house type venues. I played some bigger places, but mostly that's kind of where we're playing these days.
Now, as a folk singer, who influenced you in your youth? You're still a young man, but who were some of the people who you looked up to along the way?
Well, my big influence was John Prine. I got his albums from my dad's record collection, and I just wore them out, you know, when I was right about when I graduated from high school, and then I started getting into Neil Young and Bob Dylan, and then after that I discovered a lot of our great Texas songwriters as well, you know, and then they just kind of spiraled from there for me. There's so many people in Texas, and that we have such a great songwriting, you know, tradition, so it's pretty easy to you know, to fall under that spell.
You've been compared to John Prine.
Yeah, yes, sir. Yeah, I just listen to so many of his albums. You know, I can't see how I could get away from being from wanting to emulate him. And you know, I remember the first time I saw him in Dallas one time in Texas. I think it was in the mid 90s. I was about 19 or so, and I went and saw him, and that was the first concert I went to. And I had been listening to him for, you know, 3 or 4 years just religiously, and then got to see him play. And then I remember, you know, everything that he was live, it was exceeded my expectations. I mean, he sounded just like he did on his albums.
Mm-hmm.
And then I discovered that a lot of our Texas writers, you know, Guy Clark and were the same, you know. So I think going to those kind of shows showed me that the writers and the troubadours, they have to deliver just like they record their songs, you know.
Well, we look forward to seeing you. Adam Carroll will be playing at Christian Street Furniture on Saturday, and it's a venue that's been used for this kind of thing before. Approximately how many shows do you do a year?
Well, you know, I've been touring with my wife now for about 3 years, and we play as a duo. She'll be there tonight. Her name's Chris, and we do probably, I can't say for sure. I bet you that, you know, we might do, you know, 100, 150 shows a year.
100, 150 shows a year.
it kind of goes up and down.
Three a week.
You know?
Well, we'll see you Saturday at Christian Street Furniture. Adam Carroll, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. For Ali Baltazar, I'm Jim Inkster. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.